better in 2025? Well, let's hope so. But why, Michael? Today, we're going to talk about four data-driven reasons why Florida State should be better in 2025. We also have four new kickoff times that have been announced that we're going to talk about as well. And the Tallahassee Regional for baseball starts today. Now, you will probably already have some games being played by the time you watch this, but we're going to just talk about a little bit there at the end. So thank you, Noll Nation, for joining us. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. We are Plant the Spear. And got an exciting one today, Michael. We got actuals, like a lot of football stuff to talk about. This is one of those where you guys know sometimes I like to dive into the numbers and things like that. And so I think you guys are really going to find this episode interesting, because if these things do come true, Florida State should be better in 2025. Now, the main question is, Michael, how much better? That is something we don't know yet. We don't know, but it can't get much worse than 2-10, but it can certainly get better. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we do that, Michael, how are you, my friend? Excited to talk about this one.
Yeah, I'm excited to get into this. Is this going to be like a bottle of Genie that we just rub each data point and then like magically 8-4 come out? Like that would be really nice. No, I'm excited to talk about this. I'm curious as what these data points are going to be and are we going to see a different trend? So let's get into it.
I hope so, man. And this is one of those where like I start digging into numbers and it's kind of like, I always say it's like forensic football science, right? Like I dig into something and I start finding, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. And then it just turns into a whole thing. So if you've watched this channel for any period of time, you know that sometimes when I get off on these tangents or whatever, but it makes sense in the end. So before we do that, now let's talk about the latest news that we got with the four kickoff times that have been announced for Florida State's 2025 season. Of course, you guys already knew that massive season opener against Alabama is a 3:30 kick on ABC. We now have game number 2, which is against East Texas A&M, which someone asked in the comments when I posted this on Facebook. They were like, we play Texas A&M this year? I was like, no, this is like Texas A&M light, right? This is the FCS version. East Texas A&M on September 6th. It is going to be a noon kick airing on ACC Network. You better drink some water and you better pack some sunscreen because it's going to be hot in Doak Campbell Stadium for that game. But hopefully that game is over quick, so maybe you can go tailgate or something after that. I mean, stay to the end, of course, but that's going to be a hot one there. Florida State's first road game and first ACC game, taking a trip up to Charlottesville against Virginia on September the 26th, is going to be a 7 p.m. kick. Now, of course, you know that's a Friday night. We pretty much thought that was going to be a night game anyway, being on Friday night. That's why you schedule those off Saturday games, and it is going to air on ESPN. Excited for that one. I'm going to hopefully be making the trip up there. That will be my first time going to UVA. I've heard it's a beautiful campus, and we better go up there and win because that's a must-win game, man. But we have not fared too well in Charlottesville lately. And then the crazy one, Michael, October the 18th on the West Coast. I don't know what sense it makes to have a West Coast game. You are playing in the Pacific time zone in the Atlantic Coast Conference. This makes literally no sense. Yep. But the October 18th game at Stanford is a 10:30 p.m. kick on ESPN. Of course, that's 7:30 California time. Michael, your boy gonna need a nap and a pot of coffee to make it through that game. I remember watching the Miami Cal game last year, man. And like, man, it was good thing it was a good game, because it was the only reason I was able to stay up and finish that one. And then the last one here, November 21st, into the snake pit that is Carter-Finley Stadium at NC State, 8 p.m. nighttime kick, another Friday night game. So, again, we knew that was going to be a night game, but it is an 8 o'clock game on ESPN. Hopefully we get some revenge there. Have not fared well against NC State recently up there at Carter-Finley. That's why I call it the snake pit. I think we've only won there one time. We haven't beat them there since 2016 and only won twice since 2010. So that's a little bit scary there. So give me some thoughts on these four kickoff times. I know you're going to be sweating it out in Doak for that East Texas A&M game. I think I'll be watching that one from the comfort of the AC at home.
Yeah, listen, I'm determined to be at all the home games next year. So I'll be right there at noon with all you Noll Nation that are going to show up there. This is always the game that, you know, if you want to bring friends and family, that ain't going to cost you an arm and leg. You know, it's usually one of these types of games there. We'll probably be on the CW++++ or something, whatever that might be. It's supposed to be on the ACC Network. So, something, it's a computer game, as they say. Yeah. So, yeah, so I'll be there. You know, that Virginia game, of course they would put that game and the NC State game at nighttime, right? Because they understand that they'll get the best crowds. It will be more susceptible to the upset. We all know going to Carter Finley Stadium is like going into the pits of hell for Florida State. I mean, we have not had the best of luck there. I was telling you, Jesse, on the pre-show that, you know, I used to live in California, so that Stanford game would have been a 7:30 kick. So it's interesting that it's 10:30 now, our time.
Yeah.
The post game, you know, for those that do post game and us included, man, we're like, are we going to do a 2 a.m. post game on Sunday morning?
No kidding. Man. Might be having breakfast with that one.
Might be having breakfast with some steak and eggs. But, you know, this is what 2-10 does. You don't get the prime slots. You know, even again, like we talked about that Alabama game, it's a 3:30 kick. It's ABC. Yeah. So it's kind of a prime slot. But imagine if Florida State had been at least 8-4 last year. That's a 7:30 kick. That's on primetime ESPN. So it's, you know, this is kind of the draw we get.
Yeah, I wish with the Stanford game they had just kind of met in the middle, right? Yeah. East Coast, West Coast. Like, what's wrong with a 3:30 kick out there to be a little bit better here, or 4:30, something off time like that? Yeah, but that's the times that we have. And so, I mean, it's just – the fun part is you're getting closer to the season. And so now that's you can really start dreaming and making plans. And, like, man, it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting to have these games being played. Hopefully – what I'm really hoping for is that Miami game is going to be your first night game in Doak. I doubt Kent State's going to be that game. So really excited. I am going to be at the Miami game. And, you know, just while we're talking about it, before we jump into the topic of the show, you know, when the season does roll around, like most of you guys know, I live around Charlotte. So it's a 7-hour drive one way. And like I do have season tickets. So I would love to go to every game, but that's a long way. But one of the reasons I do watch from home too is so we can do the post-game shows and the live streams and things like that. So make sure you guys like and subscribe to the channel now. Get ahead of time. We're getting ready to ramp up some content as we get, you know, there's some news coming out. We're going to look at doing some fun things, maybe previewing some opponents with reaching out to some resources that we have to get some inside looks at the teams on the schedule. We were just talking about that before the show. So make sure you like and subscribe so you can stay connected with us. We're probably going to be doing some giveaways during the season. And so just, yeah, that's going to be fun and exciting. But now let's talk about the subject of the show, why Florida State should be better in 2025. And again, when you were 2-10, it's kind of only up from here. And like we said before, I mean, sure, you could go 0-12, but if you lose to East Texas A&M, I mean, you might as well fire everybody and cancel the rest of the season, because at that point, that's the bottom of the bottom. That makes Jacksonville State look like the cherry on top, right? And that's so I feel like he got two gimme wins there. So it's kind of only up from here. But how far that is, man, we just don't know. We won't know that until there's too many variables to start guessing that, right?
That's right.
But what I did was I went through and I found four main topics, right? Because you have the tangibles and the intangibles. This is what we're talking about before the show. Right. I do feel like there are some intangible things that are going to make Florida State better next year. I think you have a better coaching staff. You know, like a lot of these guys that you had before were from G5 coaches. And sure, they did okay in the 22 and 23 season. But I feel like you have a higher caliber of staff this year. I think because of that, I think you're going to see better effort this year. You know, everybody talks about with Tony White, that defense, if nothing else, they play hard for him. So those are really some of the intangible reasons that I think they're going to get better. But man, that's kind of like gut and pixie dust, right? I want to look at things that you can kind of take to the bank of why Florida State should be better next year. And so that's what we dug into today. And I got four of them that if these things come true, Florida State should be better. We just don't know how much, but I think it will be a pretty good turnaround for the team this year. Now, just to kind of set the stage here, the projected wins for Florida State this year, according to Vegas, is at 7.5. So the experts out in Vegas think you're going to be somewhere around that 7-8 win mark. I think that's pretty much where me and Michael fall, around 7-8 wins. Obviously, again, remember, this is not where we want to be.
Right.
But it's a long way from 2-10, and I think it gets you back into kind of the groove of where you're trying to get, right? And also, you know, hopefully recruiting ticks up. Well, I'm also about to do an update on recruiting because it's a big month for quarterback recruiting, so make sure you stay tuned for that episode. S&P Plus, which is put out by Bill Connolly, they have us projected at 6.2 wins. Now, you can't win 0.2 games, so it looks like he's thinking somewhere around 6-7 wins. So not as good, but still, you know, better than 2-10. Obviously, I think a 6-win season will be absolutely a disappointment. I think you might be talking about firing territory in there, but that's not what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about, we're going to take a positive side, why we can get better. And what we're laying this for, right? This was kind of a last minute show idea that I started digging into. When we get done with this next week, we're going to follow up with kind of our best worst case scenarios for the 2025 season, the summer edition, because obviously this will change as we get into the fall. So if you're watching this, make sure you come back for that episode next week to make all of this kind of make sense into that episode. So let's get into the four reasons here, Michael. And so the first thing here is one that is kind of simple, that if you just take care of it on its own right, you have a really good chance of getting better. And that is your turnover margin. Florida State was abysmal at keeping control of the ball last year. 132nd in FBS of 134 teams in turnover margin at minus 16. We turned the ball over. We lost the ball 22 times. We only gained 6 turnovers on defense and only had 4 interceptions all season. That is terrible. That is not a successful method of winning games here. Now, the thing is, when you look at Phil Steele, college football expert Phil Steele, he puts out his magazine, College Football Magazine, every year, and he has a whole section there dedicated to turnover margin. Because what his data shows is that typically when you have a really large swing in one direction or the other, typically what he considers double-digit turnovers, that is almost never repeatable the next year in that same, because, you know, turnovers are so much based on luck. Right. And so it's usually not repeatable. And so what I did is I started looking around here, and in 2023, Florida State was plus 8 in turnovers. In 2022, they were plus 2. In 2021, they were minus 1. And in 2020, they were minus 3. Over Mike Norvell's career at Florida State, you have an average of around minus 2 in turnover margin. And that is even with the terrible minus 16 year in 2024. So when you look at like what Gus did on offense and you look at their turnover margin there, they average around 18 turnovers lost per year on offense. Tony White's defense averaged around 14 turnovers gained on defense as a defensive coordinator there. So you're looking at about minus 4 as your average there. So Florida State should not, hopefully, please, not be minus 16 in turnover this year. So the thing about this is this one is so simple, right? There are the other points we're going to get into, there's a little bit more leeway in these, right? But turnover margin, if you fix nothing else, if you had the same abysmal offense, the same, you know, middle to average defense, but the only thing that you fixed was turnover margin, according to Phil Steele's data since 1990, there have been 408 teams that were minus 10 in or more in turnovers. 67% of those teams improved their record, 272 teams. Now, 77% were the same or better, but we're not trying to stay at 2-10.
That's
so
right.
I only looked at the teams that got better. There, if you, like I said, if you fixed nothing but turnover margin, you have a 67% chance of having a better record. Now, again, we don't know what better record means, but better than 2-10, right? So this is, again, if you did nothing else but this, you're giving yourself almost a 70% chance of being better in 2025. And, you know, again, Florida State, obviously, we're talking about through Mike Norvell's career, has averaged minus 2. You don't expect it to be minus 16 again, right? And just a couple quick examples, and I'll throw it back to you for some thoughts, Michael, is I went back and I tried to look at some other teams that maybe had a similar turnaround. In 23 and 24, Nebraska went from negative 17, minus 17 in turnover margin in 2023 to minus 2 in 2024, and they gained 2 wins. Now, that's only 2. It's not a lot, but again, Nebraska kind of got worse in 2024, right, but their turnovers changed a lot, and they gained 2 wins. In 2022, Northwestern was minus 18 in turnovers. Now, this is a massive turnaround. I don't think this is going to happen, but boy, this would be huge.
Yeah.
In 2023, Northwestern was plus 13 in turnover margin. So they went from minus 18 to plus 13, kind of both ends of the spectrum. They went from 1-11 to 8-5. That's 7 wins in basically just fixing their turnover margin.
Yeah.
In 2021, Arizona went to from minus 17 to 2022 minus 5, which is, again, keep in mind, minus 17 is about where we were at. Minus 5 is about what our average is. They went from 1-11 to 5-7, so plus 4 wins. So I thought what this did, Michael, was this kind of shows you where if you had an extreme bounce back in turnover margin, you can gain as high as like 7 wins. If you have just a minimal increase like Nebraska did, you know, or Arizona did, you can get like plus 4 wins. So again, it doesn't have to be a drastic turnaround, but if you go from, say, negative to just positive, plus 1, plus 2, man, this could be worth a significant amount of wins at the end of the season.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to just think about the fact that, okay, so Florida State, if you go look at turnovers forced, okay, so they had 4 interceptions, they had 2 fumble recoveries, okay? They also had an additional 4 fumbles that they forced that they didn't even recover, okay? Yeah. Then you think about pass deflections, which, you know, some of them could you have intercepted, some of them you could have, but in total they had 35 pass deflections. Let's say they get 10% of the 35. So that's 3.5 deflections that they turn into interceptions, right? How much could that have changed this this 22 giveaway, right? Because then that turnover margin goes down. They were unlucky, you know, the ball bounces certain ways, you know, they when they jump on the fumble, it goes different ways. But I'm just thinking about those 35 reflections. If you do, look, you're not gonna get you're not gonna get 20 interceptions unless you're just crazy good on the defensive back. But if you turn 10 of those 35 reflections into interceptions, now you're at plus 14 on the interception side of it, right? That drastically changes the way your defense is playing. It gives your offense a better field position. The problem last year wasn't the fact that it wasn't even necessarily the defense as much as the offense just couldn't necessarily score. And then it was also turning the ball over as well. And the defense wasn't able to recover that. So yeah, if you can flip, I mean, if you can even get that, you know, turnover margin down to like minus 5.
Right.
I mean, you're already looking at an upside to changing your outcomes of wins.
Right. And what do we turn the ball over like 5 times in the Florida game?
Yes.
You know, and you actually were kind of competitive in that game, but you just couldn't hold on to the ball.
Just couldn't hold on to the ball.
You know, and again, like you're talking about with the interceptions, you had 4 interceptions all of last year. Well, the cornerback that you just brought in from Houston had 4 interceptions by himself last year.
By himself.
Right. And so again, that's really the one thing that I want to hammer home on this turnover margin before we move on to the next one is the fact that turnovers are so much based on luck.
Yes.
And his data shows that finishing negative double digits or positive double digits typically almost never happens 2 times in back-to-back seasons. So if That's you can right. just get this from awful to decent or even flip it positive, man, I think you're talking about a difference in anywhere from 2 to 4 wins without fixing a single other thing. But
That's right.
if you do start fixing things, let's start with running the ball. I think this is going to be one of the biggest ones here. And, you know, for everything Gus Malzahn may or may not be, you can take to the bank that Gus Malzahn is going to be able to run the ball. So I started going back and looking at this. I mean, at UCF, in 24, they had the 5th-ranked rushing offense. 23, they had the 5th-ranked rushing offense. In 2022, they were top 10 as well. He has had a lot of top 10 rushing offenses. Florida State's rushing offense last year was pitiful. 129th in the country at 90 yards a game. That is awful. Now, when you look at Gus Malzahn, I went all the way back from his entire career I didn't go back all the way because it does get kind of hard to find stats when you get way old. But as a head coach from 2013 at Auburn to 2024 at UCF, they average 230 yards per game rushing, which is bonkers, right?
It's crazy.
And exactly. And so, yes, Florida State, I will say, and here's something that kind of goes with another point that we're going to talk about later, but Florida State did face 5 top 25 rush defenses in 2024. So it wasn't, maybe they were helped by Florida State's abysmal rush game, but coming into next year, only 2 teams on your schedule had a top 40 rush defense next year. So you figure maybe a little bit less quality rush defenses and a guy who is proven to be able to run the ball. I mean, in 2013 at Auburn, when they went to the national championship, they averaged 328 yards a game rushing. That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so here's a couple of other things to look at. So when Florida State was held under 100 yards rushing. And this is something that I talked about in the Trouble in the Trenches episode that I did. And I wrote an article on our website where Florida State's offensive line was a big part of the reason they were struggled for many years. This is going way back before Mike Norvell. So when Florida State is held under 100 rushing yards, their record is 3-11. So this is going to paint you the picture of just how important hitting that 100 rushing mark is. When they were held under 100 rushing yards in 2024, they went 0-7. And when they rushed for over 100 yards, they went 2-3. So the only two wins they got last year was when they ran the ball for over 100 yards. 3-11 is your record under Mike Norvell's tenure at FSU when you get held under 100 yards. So now when Florida State rushes for over 100 yards in a game, their record is 30-16. So you can see how important that is, right? 30-16 to 3-11. So the interesting thing too is when I started scouting some stuff for Alabama for our last episode, I noticed that last year, every single game that Alabama lost last year also happened to be the only games that they were held under 100 yards rushing. So this isn't just exclusive to Florida State. Running the ball for triple digits makes a really, really big difference here. And so that record alone tells you how big of a difference running the ball is able to do. Now, the reason I feel confident in saying, and let me do say this. This is not just you run the ball, you're going to win games. Right. You still have to be able to throw the ball, right? There was, like, I think the Notre Dame game last year, we ran the ball for over 100 yards, but we threw for, like, 88 yards or something like that. You still got to be able to pass the ball. You still got to play defense. But UCF, under Gus Malzahn, was held for under 100 yards twice in 4 years, right? In 8 years at Auburn, he was held under 100 yards 13 times, and four of that came in 2018 when three of those games were over 90 yards. So he was pretty close there. Florida State, on the other hand, has been held under 100 yards rushing in a game 11 times in the past 2 years, and that's including the good 2023 season. So you're talking about a guy who has been held under 100 yards almost as much in 8 years, or excuse me, 12 years as Florida State has in two. So Gus being able to run the ball, and we know he's going to force that issue, is going to do so much for Florida State's offense. It is going to open up a lot of things for the pass. It's going to help with the defense. It's going to help with a lot of things. But man, you can see in the records that I laid out how important rushing the ball for over 100 yards is, and you can see how bad Florida State has been at it in the last couple of years and how good Gus Malzahn has been at not getting held under 100 yards as a play caller.
Yeah. Let me drop you a stat here, Mr. Stat Guy, to add on to your point. Last year, just as a question to you, who do you think were the top two carries attempts rushing on Florida State's team last year?
I think you probably got to be Toa Philly had to be close.
Yep. That's number one.
And
I'll
then,
be shocked if you get number two.
Oh man, I feel it's obviously got to be a trick one now. Oh gosh, I don't know, man. Maybe Luke Cromenhawk?
Yes!
Look out. Hey, look out.
Look at you. How in the world is a true freshman. Okay. So Toa Fili had 109 carries. Luke Comerhawk came in second with 63 carries.
Yeah.
Okay. He had the third most yards total on the season. Like, that's how bad.
Yeah. And most of those probably came in that one that was the one play in Miami or something where he busted loose.
Yeah. Like, that's how bad our rushing attack has been. Last year, I mean, it was terrible. And honestly, you could probably go back to the 23 season after the LSU game, at the Clemson game is where we start first seeing the cracks of the run game. And it was really kind of boom or bust with Trey Benson and Toa Fili in the back. And then it just really busted last season. And so, in a Gus Malzahn offense, I mean, Auburn was 30-10 with Gus Malzahn as their OC. And when Gene Chizik took over in 2008, they were terrible at the run, and they significantly got better and better and better and better. Now, yes, we have to caveat with an asterisk there that they did have the Heisman Trophy winner, overall number one draft pick, and Cam Newton one season and won the national title. Yes. But still, when he got to UCF, even when before they went to the Big 12, they were in the American Athletic Conference. I mean, they were dominating. They were winning. They were 9-4 both years. When they switched over to the Big 12, obviously that was a talent adjustment. It was a game adjustment. They struggled. They still won six games. But that run offense still was pretty good. And again, like you said, in the years at UCF, they were only held under 100 yards three times. Okay. So you have to look at that record and know that, well, the talent disparity obviously was part of what made them struggle the last couple of years, but they were still able to run the ball with effectiveness. And so if that can translate here to Florida State, well, we know that both Mike Norvell and Gus Malzahn, everything is predicated on them being able to run the ball. The deep shots, the wide open middle shots, the little scat, the flat throws, all is all predicated on sucking the defense up, getting them in one-on-one situations out wide, and then you can take out on that. So yeah, I think if we get a semblance, if we get 70% of a effective Gus Malzahn offense, then we'll definitely see an improvement in the win total overall.
Yeah, I totally think so, man. And, you know, when you look at like having Thomas Castellanos, obviously, I don't really think you need him to run for 1,100 yards like he did at Boston College in 2023. Right. I think you're going to need more than like the 190 he had last year at Boston College. Of course, that wasn't a full season. But when you think back to when he made the national championship game at Auburn as the head coach with Nick Marshall, Nick Marshall's passing was not exceptional. He ran for like 1,200 yards or something like that. So, it just goes to show you how being so dominant at running the ball can really make a big difference. And again, like when we talk about Florida State, so these, and you know, this will be the last thing I'll add on this one. But when you look at Florida State under Mike Norvell, their averages running the ball in 2024, obviously we know it was terrible, 90 yards a game on average. In 2023, it was 150 yards per game on average. In 2022, they ran for 214. They were really good at running the ball that year. And then 178 in 2021. I didn't really count the COVID season there. But Gus Malzahn, starting at 2024 UCF, going back to Auburn, 248, 228, 228, 196, 199, 167, 218, 271, 196, 256, 328. Yeesh. Gus Malzahn's worst years running the ball are like Mike Norvell's best years running the ball. Now, again, like I said, you've got to be able to pass the ball too. And so I think with Herb Hand and Gus Malzahn calling this offense, even if you go look at the offensive line that you're bringing in this year with Herb Hand, and when you look at some run blocking grades via PFF, Pro Football Focus, you're pretty much better across the board. Like Darius Washington was a 60.2 run block grade last year. Gunnar Hansen was at 58.1 at Vanderbilt. So you're kind of even there. Terrence Ferguson was your highest snap count playing guard last year at left guard. I went by snap counts here. His run blocking grade was 36.3. That is abysmal. Adrian Medley at UCF, who transferred over from the Gus Malzahn offense, was a 66.2. So you're almost doubling your run blocking grade there. At center, Maurice Smith was a 61.3. Luke Pettibon was a 68.3 and 73.4 the year before that. Now, Keandre Jones, obviously, Richie Leonard, that's your grade can be even there at 61.9. And then at right tackle, Jeremiah Byers, who played the most for you there, was 63.8. Micah Pettis was a 72.7 run blocking grade. So realistically, you are either neck and neck even or much better in run blocking grades in the offensive lineman that you brought in. You have an offensive system that predicates on running the ball. And again, like I said, man, you can see the difference in the record. So it is going to be very, very helpful to help FSU get better if they can run the ball. Like if you only get held under 100 yards and maybe one or none, there was a lot of years where Gus Malzahn was never held under 100 yards rushing.
That's right.
That's going to be huge for your success in 2025.
Well, and let me just say this real quick. When you go back to look at Gus Malzahn at UCF, okay, so his first year at UCF, 2021, he had Dylan Gabriel as his main starter. And Dylan Gabriel is not really a rushing quarterback. Okay. Dylan Gabriel ran for, it looks like 24 yards or 24 attempts or 125 yards. Okay. They still went 9-4. So they had a pretty decent year because they had an electric running back. The next year he gets
Rhys Plumlee.
Rhys Plumlee. Okay. John Rhys Plumlee had 159 attempts, 862 yards. Okay. Nick Marshall, his first year had 1,068 yards. His next year had 800 and something yards. And notice that when Gus Malzahn has a quarterback that can run for at least 800 yards, their average record is minimum 8 wins. Minimum.
Exactly. Yeah, and Rhys Plumlee and Nick Marshall are a good example. Like, if you're not confident in Thomas Castellano's passing ability, John Rhys Plumlee was a running back at quarterback, basically. Exactly. And Nick Marshall was a converted DB that was basically a running back at quarterback. So as long as you can run the ball and Thomas Castellanos can stay healthy, that Gavin Sawchuk addition was huge, and you improve that offensive line, man, that's going to go so far in creating success for next year. Now, as much as we just talked about being able to run the ball, what is equally important, Michael, is Absolutely. Being able to stop the run. And this is where I get excited talking about Tony White's defense. Now, to give credit where it's due, Adam Fuller, as a defensive coordinator at Florida State, typically had pretty good passing defenses. I think in 2023, they were actually like the number one defense in pass defense efficiency, but they've never really been very good at stopping the run. And so Adam Fuller, in his career here at Florida State, you know, that was 2020, 2021, 22, 23, and 24, they held 11 teams under 100 yards rushing with him as DC. Tony White at Nebraska held 15 teams under 100 yards rushing in 2 years. So he held 4 more teams under 100 yards rushing than Adam Fuller did in 5 years. He did it 7 times in 3 years at Nebraska for 22 total times. This is a defense that is built to stop the run. Actually, I remember last year, I have a graphic that I never posted on this, and maybe I should coming up, but I saw a stat where Nebraska, with Tony White as defensive coordinator, did not give up a single rushing touchdown in at home for Nebraska for the first time since 1939. So that defense is built to stop the run. And again, when you look at Nebraska, number eight ranked rushing defense, giving up around 101 yards per game in 2024. Florida State's was 107th, giving up 185 yards a game. In 2023, another top 10 rushing defense for Tony White at 93 yards per game on average. Even in 2023, when Florida State was great, 72nd ranked rushing defense, giving up 152 yards a game. Like I said, Adam Fuller's rush defenses have typically been pretty bad. Yeah. At Syracuse in 2022, because I wanted to include the Syracuse, because here's what worries me the most, and I'm just going to be totally transparent and honest with this. What worries me the most about Tony White is these Big Ten defensive coordinators have great statistical numbers, but the Big Ten offenses they face are not great. So that's what really worries me, because in 2024, Tony White only faced 2 top 50 rushing defenses the whole season. And in 2023, there was only 1. So the ACC typically has better offenses than defenses. Florida State faced 6 top 50 rushing offenses in 24, and they have 3 coming up in 2025. So not a big difference there. So if Tony White can take advantage of those kind of poor slate of rushing offenses that you had, and do keep in mind some of those best rushing offenses that you had, Alabama, who lost Jalen Milroe, you have Miami, who was a great rushing offense last year. They lost 1,000 yard back. You have a couple other ones there that are going to be losing some of those guys. Notre Dame is not on the schedule this year. That's big too. And so you go back to his time at Syracuse, and in 2022, they had the 52nd ranked rushing defense at only 144 yards a game. Not bad, still better than the 2023 FSU defense was, and that defense was elite. Florida State's was 75th at 156. And then in that year, in 2022, they did face 6 top 50 rushing offenses in the ACC. So again, you're talking about much better competition, and still was right on the verge of having that top 50 rush defense. Now in 2021, he had the 26th ranked rush defense, giving up only 126 yards a game. Florida State's was 54th at 145. So even in his worst year with a rushing defense, was better than Adam Fuller's best year, right? And you know, when you look at this 2025 schedule coming up, there were 0 teams that last year were in the top 30 in 2024. So I'm telling you, man, I really feel like being able to control the ground game on both offense and defense is going to be huge for Florida State's success next year. And you know, this Tony White's defense, again, is really predicated on stopping the run. Now, the one thing that does worry me, besides the thing that I talked about before, is your defensive line depth. I do worry about that a little bit, because Nebraska did have a pretty elite set of defensive linemen last year. But again, if he can produce a top almost 25 rush defense at Syracuse, where you didn't have near the talent that you got to work with at Florida State. You've heard James Williams talk about that. Then, man, I think controlling that ground game will be huge for Florida State in 2025. And, dude, I don't think it's going to happen. But if they don't give up a rushing touchdown and Doak all year, man, build a statue, right?
Build a statue.
Build Nicky Andrews first, which, by the way, he deserves a statue.
Thank you.
But, man, that would be massive to have at least a top 25 to top 10 rushing defense next year.
I mean, my gosh, Jesse, just looking at those, just hearing you talk about those numbers, I mean, it's just crazy. And the thing I will say is you're absolutely right. One thing that that Adam Fuller hasn't been great at in his tenure is his rushing defense. It's always been the problem that we've just been so frustrated about. I mean, his first year in 2020, it was ranked 97th in the country. Then and next, the following year, it got better. It went to 55, so that was a significant jump. Then in one of our best seasons in 2022, it got worse again at 74th in the country. Then it got better at 11th. And I mean, that defense was just in that that year's defensive numbers were absolutely insane. And then it went from 11th to 41st in the country in rush defense. Obviously the pass defense got even worse. It's always been terrible. It's never really been that great. And so you look at Tony White, and I share the same concern with you as far as outside of Ohio State, Penn State, and maybe Michigan, the offenses in the Big Ten they're not chucking it all over the field. They're not scoring high numbers there because in Big Ten country, that weather, it's not as great after, once you get into late September, early October. So they're not throwing it. You know, Big Ten, you know, what they're synonymous for is the big, bulky running backs and the big offensive lines. So yeah,
Wisconsin, you might look,
Wisconsin's and the Rutgers and all those guys, Michigan State, you might have great numbers defensively in some of those cases, but now you're going to come to a wide open ACC. Yeah. Right now, the good thing is he did have experience in the ACC with Syracuse. So,
right.
I think he's going to lean on that. And plus he's probably going to, I'm pretty sure this is going to be the best set of talent he's ever worked with. Yeah. You know, no offense to Nebraska fans out there or Syracuse fans out there, but this is going to be the best set of talent he's ever worked with. And so I imagine that we're going to be able to see improvement. We've seen consistency. If they can stop the run and be a, make teams one dimensional in that way, then yeah, this could definitely add to that, that win total there.
Right, because he surely is going to have more talent here, even in the situation that we're in, than he ever had at Syracuse,
for
one, and maybe at a better or equal to defensive line at Nebraska. But I think across the board, you're going to have – now you'll see more passing, so that's going to be important too in the ACC, like you said. I mean, it's more rush. But again, in the 2 years that he was at Nebraska, he held 60% of the teams that they faced under 100 yards, man, that is going to be massive. If you're rushing for, 200 yards a game under Gus Malzahn and you're not giving up 100 yards, you are going to force some of these teams to throw on you. And then, again, Alabama's breaking in a brand new quarterback here. Like, you got some questions there going down the line. Yep. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest factors that's going to make you better next year. Now, the last point here that we have, number four on the list, is strength of schedule. I think this is going to be pretty big too, because the caveat with this is obviously teams can change from year to year. I mean, that was pretty apparent when one of us went from 13 wins to 2 wins. Teams can have wild swings, right? We've seen 5-7 to 10-3. Yep. We're hoping to see at least 2-8, right? We're hoping to see big changes. So a lot of these teams can change. But one of the things, if you remember back to last year before the season, everybody kind of joked, because when we went through the schedule thing, like for me, when I do my preseason kind of in-depth look at everybody, I look at what Florida State has. I know what Florida State has, but it's more about the other teams on the schedule. Who are you going to face? That is almost equally or more important. And I warned everybody last year. I'm like, dude, Memphis is going to be tough. Cal is not a slouch. Like, Georgia Duke is not the Duke of old. Georgia Tech. Like, I'm
still mad at you for saying those things.
I was waving the yellow flags, man. I was like, you guys got to be careful with this. This is a tough schedule. Because even last year, every single team, not counting Charleston Southern, the FCS team, everybody was at least 500 or better before the bowl game happened. And bowl games are hard to judge anymore, you know, because all the opt-outs and things like that. But every team on your schedule besides Charleston Southern last year was a bowl team. And when you look at the 2024 combined opponent record of all the teams you played last year, it was 99-49. There were only two teams that ended up with a losing record. That was Cal and UNC at 6-7. And there were five 10-win teams. Notre Dame, who played in the national championship, SMU, who had a great year at 11-3, Memphis at 11-2, Clemson, and Miami. So that was five 10-win teams you had to face. You had five top 25 scoring offenses. You had zero ranked below 100. You had only one top 25 scoring defense that you faced, but there were five in the top 50 and zero ranked 100 or below. So that was, man, that schedule was harder than people want to admit it really was. Now, that doesn't excuse 2-10, but that was a tough schedule. So when you fast forward to 2025 and you look at what your opponents on this year did last year, again, knowing that teams can change year over year, but wild swings aren't very common, right? Especially for teams that like you're facing, you know, like for instance, take a Stanford or a Wake Forest. Yes, they have a new coach. They have some new pieces on both of those teams. You know, maybe a team like Miami can go in and snag all these big pieces from the portal and have a drastic turnaround. But Wake and Stanford aren't really teams that are going to be getting big recruiting classes, big portal additions to be able to really flip that record around. So maybe the change is minimal there. Well, the opponents that are on your schedule this year, last year went a combined 68-72 compared to 99-49. That's a massive difference. Remember, you had five teams last year with a 10-win record and only two with a losing record. This year, the teams last year, for your opponents this year, obviously, two 10-win teams, and that was Clemson and, Clemson and Miami.
Yep.
And then you had six teams with a losing record last year. Kent State, UVA, Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, NC State, and then you could also count the FCS team as well. So that is just so much different than what you had last year. You had three top 25 scoring offenses, three ranked 100th or below. You only had one top 25 defense, so basically the same as last year, but you have three ranked 100th or below and three more ranked from 90 to 100. So, you know, the point is, and I think what's important with this is you still have hard on there, right? You still have Alabama, who's probably not what Notre Dame was last year, a national championship, like runner up.
Right.
You know, you still have Clemson, who's probably going to be better this year with bringing Klubnik back and all that stuff. UF is probably pretty close to what they're going to be last year, maybe a more experienced Lagway. I don't think Miami's going to be as good as what they were last year. They're going to be good. I think they are going to be like an 8-10 win team, but I don't think they're going to be great. You know, you lost a number one overall pick at quarterback. Cam Ward is not something that you come across every year. You lost a 1,000-yard rusher, 1,000-yard receiver. You lost all those things. Kent State is your Memphis this year. They were 0-12 last year. That is a massive difference. You know, Charleston Southern, East Texas A&M kind of cancel each other out. But what's important, I think, there is that middle meat of the schedule, right? There's no SMU this year. There's no Duke, who, again, Duke is not a slouch anymore.
Right.
There's no Georgia Tech. You know, last year you started five of your first 10 games were against ranked teams, and it was basically tough game after tough game after tough game. You really didn't get a break until Charleston Southern. This year, I would guess that about three of the first 10 are going to be ranked, and that's Bama, Miami, and probably Clemson. So you start strong. But I think the other important thing there too is, you know, again, like I said, that middle meat of the schedule, the Wake, the UVA, the Stanford. It's hard to gauge, but you got Virginia Tech, who's a team that has been struggling lately, and they're pretty terrible outside of Lane Stadium, so they're coming to Doak this year. When you look at that, I think that is going to equal up more wins for you. And then as much as I wanted that East Texas, Texas A&M game before Alabama, man, I do think as long as you are competitive against Alabama and you get that three-week stretch of East Texas A&M bye week, Kent State to really get early season momentum, to really kind of hammer on, you know, the details of the things that maybe went wrong in the Alabama game. You know, remember last year, man, where everybody talked about we were like the only team in college football that didn't score over 21 points.
Yep.
Well, that's because everybody else had played a cupcake early in the season, and we didn't play a single team that was really kind of bad until we faced Charleston Southern. And then we, of course, scored over 21 points. So, man, I think just when you look at the schedule, you still have a couple of hard games on there, just like you did last year. But that middle meat to bottom of the schedule is significantly easier than what you had last year. So I think that, along with everything else that we talked about, is going to equal more wins this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think once you get out of that Alabama game, depending on how that goes, you got 3 weeks to basically either recover or to continue to build upon, you know, right. So that East Texas A&M Lions game, then you got Kent State Golden Flashes, right? And then you go up to Virginia, and that game should be easier than what we're probably feeling. Right.
Especially with a bye week in the middle too. So you can kind of start prepping for them. Yeah,
exactly. And then, you know, what's going to be great is that with that East Texas A&M and the Kent State, man, what you should have is that game. You should have that game locked down by halftime. That way you can put in some of the backups, start developing that depth a little bit more. So when you go into that Virginia game, if something wacky, crazy happens, which usually does when we do these high school Friday night games with the ACC, you've already kind of worked through some of that stuff. You should go into Virginia, and I'm going to say you should win. So at worst, going into that Miami game, you should be no worse than 4-1 or 3-1. That's what you should be, right? If you are going into that Miami game 3-1, listen, Miami is not the same. They lost a ton of people.
A lot.
Yep. They lost the number one overall draft pick. They lost a lot on the offense. They lost several on the defense. This is not,
which is bad.
Which is bad. And here's the thing, Jesse, if you go back to the game last year, Florida State had a chance going into the fourth quarter.
That was their best game, honestly.
That was their best game. So it's not that the gap between you and Miami was this far behind. I mean, it was probably more like this. And with all of their losses, all of our gains, and maybe a better culture and everything else, we've probably, hopefully, closed that gap. So the schedule is, as you said, lighter, a little bit lighter this year because you're not facing as many bowl eligible teams as you faced last year. Again, everyone has permission to get better, as you like to say.
Exactly.
And so teams could have gotten better or worse. And so I think the schedule this year sets you up where 8 wins is not impossible or unimaginable. That actually 8 wins feels gettable, very gettable.
Yeah, and you know, like NC State's a perfect example. I think they're a team that can probably get better, right? Because they're typically not as bad as they were last year.
Right.
But again, man, they got their doors blown off by Tennessee. They were down by like 38 points at halftime to Clemson last year.
That's right.
You know, Pitt started hot at like, I think, 6 or 7-0 and almost beat Clemson.
Yeah.
But then they lost the last six games of the season. Wake Forest has a new coach and lost their entire offensive line and their quarterback. There's a new coach at Stanford who came in late because of a scandal or whatever, and he didn't really have time to go to the portal and fix things. So, man, I just, again, like what I'm talking about is when you combine all the things, if you can successfully run the ball on the ground, you can slow down the run on defense much better than you have in the past. You stop giving the friggin' ball away and you fix the turnover margin. Again, that 1 point alone is 67% chance that you're going to get better. You combine all those things with a little bit easier schedule. You know, sure, you might lose to some of the top teams on your schedule. That is going to equal more wins in 2025. So, again, that's why I wanted to come with this as more of a data-driven approach, not just the intangibles. Like, I think you're going to have better leadership at quarterback. You're going to have better coaching. You're going to have better effort and all that stuff. I think those are going to play into it too. But, man, I think these 4 data points are going to make a big difference to push you to a better record this year. It's just, we just don't know what that's going to be. Is that 6 wins? Is that 8 wins? Is that 10 wins? You know, we'll see, but I think all these things combined, if you do that, and that's an if, you still have to go out there and do it.
That's right.
If you can do it. And that's why I encourage you to watch next week when we talk best worst case scenarios, because there are some things that we're going to talk about that could derail all of this happening. And so if you hit on these 4 points, man, I think you're going to see an improvement of at least 5 to 6, maybe even 7 wins.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. If Florida State can, man, if the changes that they've made in the offseason, obviously bringing in the new coaches, obviously getting back to that climb mentality that maybe got lost after the snub, and being more direct with the players, being not like their best friends, but just saying, hey, we're here to win. If you're not here to win, you just, you know, it's the old saying, like, you ain't got to go home, but you can't stay here kind of thing.
Exactly.
That's basically what Mike Norvell did this offseason. So if those intangibles, like you said, play in. And then the actual on the field improvement. Like, we have a defensive scheme that actually is going to stop the run. We don't have loafing on the field. We're not being blocked out of plays. We're not throwing balls into the brick. You know how much that costs, man? Yeah. Okay. We're actually running the ball. We don't have a D line in our quarterback's face at seconds after he's snapped the ball, right? We're wide receivers are getting open. They're being thrown open. They're being schemed open, right?
And actually catching the ball.
And actually, thank you. Actually catching the ball, using those hands that God gave them to see the pigskin get inside their hands and hold on to it. If we're doing all of those things and calling good plays, then yeah, I can easily see our team improving by plus six on what they did last year easily. Now, depending on how that all looks, because that all has to go together. Of course, there's going to be some luck. I mean, Florida State had to be. I think I remember you telling me a while back that on the luck factor somewhere that we were one of the most unluckiest teams in the country last year, on top of just being absolutely hot garbage.
Right.
So if those things can improve, then yeah, easily we can see a plus six gain in the win column, which would then set Mike Norvell up to have another season to try to continue that climb again.
Yeah, 1,000%, man. There's just so many things that if they hit on, I think can really make a huge difference here. But again, it has to happen. You can't just wish it into reality. It's got to happen. But these are things like we talked about where you go back and you look at the numbers and the history where these things have happened more often than not. So the statistical odds and history works in your favor that these things are going to bounce back in the other direction. The pendulum is going to swing back the other way, and that's going to equal way more wins for you. So again, it remains to be seen, but I think these are four data-driven reasons why Florida State should be better in 2025. Now, the last thing I want to touch on before we get out of here is the Tallahassee Regional Baseball. Their road to Omaha starts right now, and it's a good thing they're getting to host this regional. Unfortunately, they will have to go on the road if they advance to a super regional here. But game one starts Friday at 3 o'clock. Again, by the time most of you are watching this game is probably going to be underway or maybe even over. It is against Bethune-Cookman, who they did beat 9-7 in the regular season. That was a little bit of a sweat fest there because Bethune-Cookman started to come back. They have a pretty good offense, but their defense is not great. It's the worst of the grouping here. The team that I really am watching out for, man, is Northeastern, 48-9 on the season. They have a 27-game win streak. They have the number one team ERA in the country. They have the fewest runs allowed per game in the country. Their defense is excellent. Now, their offense is not very good, 88th in batting average, down at 69th in runs per game. But the main difference here, man, is the strength of schedule that they played. So Florida State has played the 24th ranked strength of schedule. And then Mississippi State, the other Power 5 team, they've had the 27th ranked strength of schedule. And Florida State and Mississippi State really kind of mirror each other. They have the same exact number of runs per game and runs per game allowed. So they're kind of really even there. They played almost the same kind of strength of schedule. They're both very well-rounded teams. You look at this Northeastern team, their strength of schedule is ranked 168th. So, yes, that record is good, but it's deceiving because they haven't really played anybody good. The same with Bethune-Cookman, 230th ranked strength of schedule. So, Joey Vellini is going to get the start for Florida State on Friday against Bethune-Cookman, which means they're saving Jamie Arnold for that Saturday game, which is going to be big because you're going to get the winner of Mississippi State against Northeastern. So, that's going to be a tough game. So, man, one of those are two good opponents, but you should get by Bethune-Cookman, and then hopefully Jamie Arnold on the mound gets you that win there in game number two. And the last thing I'll say about this, I want to throw it back to you. Michael, I am done with wishing for things that aren't going to happen, but I did see someone on another Florida State podcast the other day was interviewing Marco Dinges, and they had hinted at maybe a potential big return by a Florida State player into the postseason. Again, I'm not putting the cart before the horse or anything like that. I don't know if that means it's Cam Leiter. I don't know if that means it's another player, but that would be huge for the pitching staff there. But yeah, man, looking at this Tallahassee Regional, I think you got to be pretty happy with your pairings here. if you get past Bethune-Cookman in that first game, and you should, and again, when I say they beat them 9-7, that was a midweek game earlier in the season. I believe Evan Crest was already out for that game. So going against Joey Vellini is going to be a much tougher challenge for them. They haven't faced anybody. They've only faced two Power Four teams all year, Miami and Florida State, and they lost both of those. Yeah. So you should get past that first one. But, man, that Saturday game is going to be a tough one against either one of those teams. But I think it's very winnable. Now, if they do win, that game will be at 6 o'clock on Saturday. If they were to lose, it will be at noon on Saturday. And, of course, once you lose, it now becomes an elimination game because it is a double elimination format. So, man, the road to Omaha starts now. And if you win this, you're paired with the winner of the Corvallis Regional. But I think I like Florida State's chances just from the teams that they faced and the teams that you're matched up with. I think they got a really good chance of winning this regional.
Yeah, I really do. I watched that selection show and I thought, you know, we were going to get jobbed, you know, just because of the, you know, just with the SEC love fest that was going on.
Yeah.
But I was actually pretty happy with the draw. I mean, yeah, that Bethune-Cookman game, you know, if you don't play your cards right, as in any game, they could sneak up on you, but I think you should handle them. I love that Vellini. That link went back to the same formula he used in last year's region where they went 3-0, where he went with Dorsey first last year and then came back with Jamie Arnold in the second game, and then they won the third game. So I like throwing Vellini out there. Let him get that in. Let's dominate Bethune-Cookman. And then you're probably likely going to see, man,
I will say this too. I did see also, speaking of saving your ace, Mississippi State is saving their ace for game two. So chances are you're going to see their best pitcher.
Exactly. If they beat, because they got to play Northeastern, who is the two seed. And so if they can get past that, then you want ace on ace and game two against Mississippi State or even Northeastern as well. And then they'll figure out who will go game three. Look, the goal is to just try to get to super regionals. For me, success, I would consider this. I mean, we've been spoiled, so nothing less than a College World Series invite feels like a kind of down season. But based on everything we've seen, if you can get to the Super Regional, I'll take the results of the Super Regional. But if you don't win this regional, then this season really feels like it was just a huge miss with the talent you had, with what you're going on. But I think they can do this. I really think they can. If the bullpen can just show up, just give us a couple good innings every game. That would be so great. And then the other thing is, I know I've heard a lot of Florida State fans talk about this, like, oh, we have to go out to Corvallis if we do go to the Super Regionals. That's if Oregon State wins, guys.
Right.
We've seen upsets in these playoffs before. So this tournament before. So, like, let's not just automatically assume that Florida State's going to have to go out to Corvallis, because if Oregon State loses, Florida State's going to host a Super Regional. That's simple. So we have to be hoping for Florida State one to take care of its own business, and we'll worry about the Corvallis region after that. But we got to take care of the regional first.
Yeah, I 100% agree, man. For you to be like number two for a few weeks and all this type of stuff, if you don't make it out of this regional as the number one seed against teams you should beat, that would be a big disappointment. But if you can get to that super regional and compete and maybe get it down to the final game and hopefully be in the running for Omaha, I think you feel pretty good about where you're at with this season. Yeah. There's a lot of young talent on this team. Yep. And so, unfortunately, you're going to lose some of the pitching staff. Yeah. But, man, that's a question mark that's going to have to be answered next year. But, man, there's so many talented Miles Bailey and all these guys, man. There's just so much talent on this team. So that's going to be it, man. We wish them the best of luck. Obviously, baseball season was so much fun to watch last year. It carried us through the summer there for a while we were waiting on football season. So good luck to Link and the guys in the Tallahassee Regional starts tonight. I know Hauser's going to be packed. I can't wait.
Can we just get one team have a good postseason?
Can we end this postseason just snide that we've been on? I mean, from Ham's team to the snub to the check swing last year, like, man, it's just been one thing after another.
This year, we
have got to overcome this hump in the postseason. But that's going to be it for today, guys. We appreciate you checking out the show and tuning in with us, spending some time with us here talking Florida State. Make sure that you like and subscribe if you enjoy this content. Again, thank you for pushing us over 2,000 subscribers. Check out plantthespirit.com, our website. You can find podcast episodes, the YouTube videos. I have put up a couple articles up there. I'm going to be doing some more stuff on that. Again, check back next week. We're going to be doing that best worst case scenario episode. I also am going to be rolling out next week a recruiting update at the quarterback position because it is a big month for Florida State. Yeah. We got some big time official visitors going to be on campus. We're going to talk about that next week as well. So that's going to be it for us, guys. I appreciate you tuning in, and we will catch you on the other side. Thanks for watching, and go Noles.
Go Noles.